Well, Wisconsin public libraries date back to 1872 when the first one was established in Black River Falls. Almost 150 years later, public libraries in the Badger State have survived Netflix, YouTube, Amazon. Hi, Larry Mueller again. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk about libraries and how they are adapting to the digital world with a couple of guests. We're joined by Heidi Cox. She's the director of Edie Locke Public Library in McFarland. Heidi, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also with us by phone, Abigail Phillips. Abigail is an assistant professor in the School of Information Studies at UW-Milwaukee. Abigail, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
As we visit with these two, I hope you'll join in. We're going to be talking with them about today's libraries, what they offer, and what they add to your community, as a matter of fact. And I hope you'll join in. Why do you go to your library? How have libraries made your life better, maybe? What kinds of technology would you like to see at your library? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Heidi, let's start with you. I mentioned Amazon and Netflix and similar platforms. They became popular. And when they did, I think there was some research on this. Wisconsin Policy Forum reported that visits and circulation of traditional materials decreased between, I think it was about 2000 to 2018, that time period. But on the rise are Wi-Fi use, library Wi-Fi use, I know program participation, circulation and of electronic materials. What does that mean for your library in McFarland?
Since the pandemic has started to wind down, we've actually seen a huge increase in visitors. So, for example, in our community is about 8,000 to 10,000 people. And in July alone, we had like 22,000 visitors to our building. So as you said, programs have been going up. So we've seen a huge thirst for getting back together and, in meeting spaces and having that kind of human contact. So that's been really great for us. We've also seen some increase in checkout of books and some of our categories, especially like children's literature and stuff. We've seen increases over 2019 numbers. But I'd say that definitely the media, like DVDs and CDs and stuff like that, have really decreased. And to help supplement some of the things that our community wants, we've added a lot of streaming services for them as well.
And let's get Abigail into this. Well, here we've got this digital age. You might as well say, what does that mean for libraries?
I think that means a lot of different aspects of technology that can occur. I do a lot of research into makerspaces, and makerspaces are burgeoning in public, both rural and urban libraries. And makerspaces are simply areas to create and tinker and play around with. And sometimes they involve technology such as 3D printers, laser cutters, knitting, sewing, looms, cooking. Here in Milwaukee, we have Mitchell Street Public Library that has a fantastic makerspace. So that's more of the newer aspects of technology that are you can find in public libraries. And I'm also as a user, I use a lot of the streaming platforms that have been mentioned, such as Libby, to download audiobooks and ebooks. So there's a lot of realms for it.
I guess I've been around. Maybe I'm too old, but I still like to pick up a book and actually turn the pages. Jill Ledoux, on the other hand, uses all electronic. I think she rarely picks up a book unless it's a cookbook. She's shaking her head at me right now in the other room. Well, you know, Abigail, this strikes me. I think about training, and you're obviously involved with it. I think training for future librarians has changed, I would imagine, quite a bit.
It has. There's been a lot of interest in equity and inclusion and accessibility, making libraries more accessible, because not everybody can access the library as equally as another person. But we talk a lot about critical librarianship, so thinking a lot about the ways in which the public libraries and academic libraries are changing and how to evolve as educators. I think technology plays a huge role in that, like how we can use technology for the best and for the improvement of patrons' lives.
Yeah, I'm thinking of two librarians that are near and dear to my heart on the UW-Madison campus, Barb Sisolak and Heather Shimon. I hope you're listening, you two, because they are fantastic people who have do so much to help our own students navigate the whole research process, and you know the best sources and sites to go, and they do so much. Aren't librarians the most helpful, kind, and considerate people in the world? Pretty much.
Yes.
Heidi popped right in, and I think Abigail agreed with this. So the inclusion of electronic materials, and that's got to expand options for, well, everybody, but particularly those with disabilities, Heidi.
Yeah, I was just thinking about a year ago, we had a request from a book club who had one of their members was blind, and the book wasn't available in audio, the title that one of their members had chosen. So we were able to get them an ebook version and then have the Kindle read it to them. So it has, we've been able to get creative with screen readers and stuff like that for vision impairment. People with mobility issues, they can get stuff right on their computer if they wish. It has really increased, and it's also increased, not just for disabled, but inclusion as far as the different audiences we serve too, that we have more title availability because storage isn't our limitation anymore.
Yeah, I guess. Abigail, a comment?
I was just thinking about some of the aspects for lower income families. They can take away Wi-Fi to their own homes and have access to the internet, whereas they may otherwise not have that, and that's something that's really coming up. Well, it's been coming for a while, I think pre-COVID even, but with COVID, it really, really became a big boom because people couldn't access their library for a certain period of time due to the nature of COVID.
Yeah. Marquette Law School polls from 2015 and I think 2017 found differences in the way people use libraries based on demographics. When asked how a library closing would impact them personally, Black, older, and low-income responses said it would have a major effect on at higher rates than the state average. Heidi, how do you see the E.D. Locke Public Library interacting with underserved populations?
So in 2019, right before the pandemic really hit our area, we had upgraded all of our Wi-Fi access. And we had put, we were one of the first in our systems to put an outdoor access point in. So when we had to shut down, our Wi-Fi was available on our entire block. And so we would see people in their vehicles using, various devices to access the internet. So that's one of the ways that we were able to help serve. And we still have public access computers. We're still helping people do resumes and job searches, that type of thing. And we do a lot of one-on-one computer help for, if someone gets a new device or whatever, we'll help them set it up. We'll help them learn Libby. We'll help them access books or whatever their, whatever that they need to do, pay their bills or help their kids do online schooling or whatever.
Yeah. Abigail, comment?
Oh, I was just thinking about, I was just recently, Milwaukee Public Library sent me a newsletter not too long before I was appearing on this show, and they still have, they have where you can bring in your own device, which was what was just mentioned, your Kindle or your iPad or your even your phone, and you can have somebody with a little bit more technology proficiency show you how to use that device. And I remember I'm a former public librarian. I worked in Southwest Georgia, and we would have people line up outside the, well, in their cars. They would be outside of the library using our Wi-Fi when we weren't even open yet or when we had just closed, because they still needed access to the Wi-Fi. Even though the library was physically closed, it was still open to the public.
And helping the public out. Talking about public libraries today with Abigail Phillips, assistant professor in the School of Information Studies at UW-Milwaukee, and Heidi Cox, director of E.D. Locke Public Library in McFarland. They're going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us, and then you can join in. In fact, you could do it right now. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we talk about how libraries are changing across Wisconsin with our two guests, Abigail Phillips and Heidi Cox. Abigail is an assistant professor in the School of Information Studies at UW-Milwaukee, and Heidi is the director of E.D. Locke Public Library in McFarland. So as we talk with the two of them, I hope you'll join in. How important is your library to you? What questions do you have about the libraries and how they're doing today? Experiences to share. I'd love to hear your experiences working with libraries and librarians. Give a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Got an email from Tom from Madison. He called, but he couldn't stay with us. So here's his message. He says, nurses and librarians are two of the most helpful categories of people on earth. Librarians were so helpful to Tom as he finished his advanced degree at UW-Madison. Heidi, that's a nice thing.
Over the years, I've worked with a lot of librarians who, were a little bit burned out from nursing, so they went back and got a library degree. And I actually had a doctor who said once she could get to the point of retiring, she was thinking about changing careers. So I think there's a lot of parallels with, being helpful and trying to help people.
And working with people. Abigail, comment?
Yes, I think that there's a lot of I've encountered some social workers as well who also got burnout but still wanted that service component to their livelihood, so they went into libraries.
Abigail, by the way, you're a professor of information studies, and somebody was wondering what is information studies and how does it relate to libraries.
Oh, that's a great question. Information studies, or information science, as it's also called, relates to the dissemination, collection, curation, processing, and just anything to do with information. It also involves a lot of information technology. My focus is mostly on public libraries. As a former public librarian, that's where my interest is. But public libraries deal in information, so that's essentially what information studies is.
So, and you have some research. I was looking at some of your research on the relationship between rural libraries and young adult cyberbullying, which was really tell us a bit about that.
That during my dissertation and currently, I looked at how school and public librarians can support cyberbullied youth. And I found that it's mainly through empathy. It's that kindness and caring that librarians show that really feels the need for students or young patrons who are encountering cyberbullying and bullying in their schools or at home.
Heidi, anything to add there?
I can speak from my own experience. That's where I spent all my time in high school at the library, or a lot of it too. And that's one of the reasons I became a librarian. I've worked in various careers and circled back. And I think the empathy and kind of the bibliotherapy had a lot to do with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And we have, and a lot of libraries have, we have a teen librarian who, you know, I think in a lot of high schools, you have like the athletes and you have, you know, your major groups. And I think the library, the one thing that we really try to cater to is the kids who are looking for leadership opportunities but are not extroverts. So, like, becoming, you know, like, doing a lot of public speaking or whatever is not, like, their thing, but they still kind of want to have a leadership. So we've created, like, our teen advisory board to give them some opportunities and a kind of more quiet way to provide input and do leadership. And so, like, some of the stuff that they do is they lead some of the programs for some of the younger children.
Oh, Abigail, comment?
Yes. I was just thinking about when I was a teen librarian in a rural community, and we had a teen advisory board. And I had some fantastic teenagers who, like Heidi said, they weren't athletes. They weren't the most popular kids in school, but they were very studious, and they were looking for an outlet to show that leadership. And so they got to run programs. They got to come up with their own programs. One teen started a manga reading group. This was before manga was a really big thing. It's been a while since I was a teen librarian, but I really enjoyed just hearing their excitement about libraries.
And there's even, I was on your website, Heidi, I was looking at all the various things that you have, and you even have a teen after hours, and this is all designed by our teens themselves.
Yeah,
huh?
And our teen librarian, Abby, she does an awesome job working with them and kind of trying to organize all their ideas because sometimes they're a little outlandish. But but the after hours program, I mean, it's just they have a great time being in the library with no one else there, and they can, you know, make noise and no one says anything, and they can be a little messy and be just, you know, themselves. So we've had a lot of success with that program. They really love it.
How is your role? I don't know how long you've been in your role, but your profession, you're pretty young, so you haven't been there very long.
I've been at McFarland for 10 years, and I've been a librarian for about 20 years.
Okay, so how have those roles changed so much or at all for you?
I would say when I had worked in IT and wasn't really enjoying it, partially because all I did was read IT manuals, and I wanted to read regular books. So I decided to go back to library school because I love books, I love research, I love helping people. And librarianship hit all those things. I think my job is kind of, I would say I started for the books, and now it's all about the community and relationship building that we do in our communities. So that it's kind of changed the focus with, we do a lot of programming, and we bring all the different organizations in our community together to either, you know, for the greater good.
So, and Abigail, how do you see library engagement differ perhaps among rural or suburban or urban communities? Are there differences?
I think I definitely noticed this when I moved. I grew up in a rural community and worked in a rural community once again, but now that I live in Milwaukee, I think the interactions between patrons and librarians and library staff seems to be a little bit different. There's a closeness that, and I'm just speaking from personal experience, so this is anecdotal, not research-based.
Sure.
But there's a closeness. You get to know people because you know there are members of your community that you see every day. I would see patrons at the grocery store. I would see kids when I would go do book talks at the high school or the middle school. So there was this closeness that we could develop, like everyday interactions at the public library and outside of the public library.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm amazed at the idea, the amount of programming and services that you offer. And I'm not sure this applies to McFarland, but polls from Pew Research Center found that many families don't know about what their library can offer. How do you approach that hurdle?
I think that's one of the frustrations in this digital age is people are so used to having the information come to them. And when we get notifications on our phones and text messages and all that stuff. And during the pandemic, we really noticed it that, you know, trying to get the word out about what we were able to offer was really a challenge. And so we've been experimenting with a lot of different marketing, and actually putting some, like our friends have given us some money to do Facebook ads and that. So we do programs out in the community to try to meet people where we are, and a lot of libraries are doing this all over. And then we're also doing some Facebook ads and Google ads and stuff to try to increase our reach. People are reading newspapers less. All of our traditional avenues of getting the word out have decreased. So we're still trying to figure out, get our footing in communicating that to a lot of people.
Yeah. Abigail, what do you think?
I think the social media definitely has opened a lot of pathways to engage with maybe some people who wouldn't regularly go to their public library. I was just I follow the Milwaukee Public Library, and they have an amazing Instagram account. If you don't follow it, it's funny and clever and really playful, and I think it engages people in a way that maybe other capacities may not do as well. But, social media is really fantastic. Facebook may be waning just a little bit. I think maybe TikTok. Those are opportunities for a younger crowd, but there's a lot of fun and playful ways you can engage.
And my husband actually drives the bookmobile for Dane County, and he runs the bookmobile Twitter account. So I want to give a shout out to that. He does it as the bookmobile. So it's very funny and very fun.
I love bookmobiles.
Oh, I do too. Robert in Plover has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Robert.
Hi. So I live in Portage County, Wisconsin, and we just have a tremendous library system here in Portage County with the Stevens Point branch and then other branches. But I recently was living in Topeka, Kansas, and, you know, I myself, I'm a firm believer that libraries should almost be a temple to education. And the library that was the public library in Topeka, you know, if a library should be a temple, then the library in Topeka was quite like heaven. I mean, the different offerings that were there that, you know, just went beyond the traditional media aspect of books, movies, music and stuff. I mean, they offered, opportunities for people to check out, you know, if you had a baking or a cooking project, you could check out pots, pans, different types of cooking utensils that you might need for your project. Obviously, you wash them and bring them back when you're done. But, you know, those types of things. I mean, they had a cafe in there. They had an art gallery. And, you know, that aspect of being able to branch beyond the traditional ideas of what media is and what libraries provide via media was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, that's the Library of Things. A lot of libraries have a very limited collection of that. We have some ukuleles that people can check out so they could learn to play ukuleles and some other things for home maintenance repair. We were looking at the Manitowoc Public website, and they have like projectors and, like you said, cooking, you know, like baking pans and stuff. It's a lot of things that you could try out without investing in things, or maybe you just need it, you know, for an hour or so, or whatever. And that seems to be an ever-growing collection.
Abigail, are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes. I was just about to burst in with Library of Things. I've encountered a lot. Well, I remember reading several years ago about libraries that loaned out baking pans, but there's also some that do tools, just a range of objects that you may not have at home or may not have access to or can't afford, but the library has them cataloged like they would a book and can loan it out to you.
Robert, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Mitch in Milwaukee. Mitch, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, excellent topic today. I did have a comment about the Michigan Township Library, but I want to give a shout out to the Milwaukee, Wisconsin libraries, and we have a place up in Bayfield, as you know. You love it up there.
Yeah.
They do super programs for kids and adults. So anyway, going to the Michigan Township, I talked to the clerk at their city yesterday, and they said it was the people of their area that voted to defund the library, and which just flabbergasted me. It was all because of one book that was in their library. They're willing to cancel the library, the wonderful experiences for adults, children, and teens, like you say. So I'd like your comments on this, and I'll listen offline.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Abigail, it's a challenge. Yeah.
I was just reading up on this because book censorship is becoming, it's been within the past couple months or weeks, it's really been just blowing up. And a lot of them focus on young adult literature, LGBTQ plus literature, anything to do with critical race theory, racism. There's a lot of pushback, and I think some people want to defund libraries, particularly not just public libraries, school libraries as well. They're getting a lot of pushback on what librarians and library workers have traditionally in the past purchased. We're just getting a lot of criticism for our professional duties.
Heidi, is that something that you worry about or think about?
Yeah, it's definitely something we worry about. Because it's one of the most stressful things that you can handle is book challenges. And it can be on a variety of topics. So over the last 20 years, I've had two requests for reconsideration. And one was over a swear word. And the other one was someone actually tried to ban an entire collection. So we all have policies in place that help us navigate that. And, you know, I have to give a shout out to all libraries in Wisconsin because we have such a unique system and such a culture of sharing, you know, not just sharing materials, but sharing ideas and resources and really providing support for each other. And we have, you know, UW-Madison's also been great because we have the Children's Book Cooperative, which has been really helpful with any sort of book challenges. And it isn't just like they're people are not just asking for books to be removed from the library. It's also like having books on display. They don't necessarily like the topic, and it's been really frustrating to navigate.
Hmm. You're involved in something called the Ripple Project. Could you speak to that?
Sure. That's a Dane County project. About 10 years ago, we created, all the libraries did some fundraising, and we were able to get some matching funds from the National Endowment for the Humanities to do humanities programming. And it's a really unique program that helps us fund a lot of programs. And then Tracy Harold, who's the director of the Dane County Library Service, she came to us with this idea of doing the Ripple Project, which is looking very closely at social justice issues and doing programming around that. And in the first like kind of ripple of it was doing staff training on the DEI, and inclusivity and things like that. And then also being very conscious of trying to include more people of color and people from different communities in our programming, not just to talk about, you know, their experiences or racism, but also like if we're doing in a crafting class, maybe we try to find a person of color who does whatever craft we're doing, and just kind of trying to be a little more thoughtful in those avenues. It has opened up different types of programming to us. We may not have, you know, like no one was available. Like a couple years ago, we did an African drum circle. And they have lists of resources for us to make it easy to be able to do all sorts of different things.
Hmm. Abigail, are you familiar with a project like that, a Ripple project?
No, actually. I'm really fascinated, though. I'd love to learn more.
Well, you and Heidi should get together.
Yeah, give me a call.
Because it sounds like a great project. The libraries have changed so much over my lifetime, but then particularly in the last probably 20 years, undergone some enormous changes. What's the future hold for public libraries? Abigail, you want to start?
I think the future for libraries is really, there's a lot of opportunities for improvement. I do a lot of work in accessibility. I think there needs to be some changes made for people who may have visual impairments, deafness, PTSD, neurodiverse. But I think the library can be much more open to people of different abilities. I think you can see that with the Library of Things, with makerspaces, with there's some things that the library already has, like large print books that are great for people who have difficulty reading. I just think there's a big future for it.
And Heidi, you guys even have cooking classes and book clubs and all kinds of things.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more about meeting patrons where they are. So like, it's important to have our building, we always can think of it as our community center. And so we try to create a lot of opportunities for people to gather, get together. Whether it's our story time, we have an absolutely fabulous children's library and does great story times and kids programming. Like you mentioned, the cooking classes and stuff like that. And then also being able to provide that service for people who want, you know, the streaming services or we have like the New York Times online and some other research databases so that people can help themselves or give us a call and gather information. So trying to, you know, be in our communities and, you know, it's impossible to be everywhere, but we try to do what we can.
Well, you're both doing some wonderful work, and I want to thank you both for spending some time with us today and talking about libraries. We've got some challenges, but certainly succeeding in so many ways to help build and maintain our communities. Abigail, Heidi, thank you both very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Abigail Phillips, assistant professor in the School of Information Studies at UW-Milwaukee, and Heidi Cox is the director of the E.D. Locke Public Library in McFarland. Go online. I'm going to challenge you. Go online to your library and take a look at the services your library offers, no matter where you are. You're going to be very surprised, maybe, and amazed. Tomorrow we'll talk about the Driftless region with the editor of Big River Magazine. I'm Larry Mueller, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.